This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
Houston, we do not have a problem.
Sarah Webb, Joy Drive's astrophysicist.
Good afternoon, Sarah Webb.
Good afternoon.
So excited to talk to you because we're going to get to Mercury very soon and whether it's hiding in life or not. But before we do, earlier this year, everything went crazy on the internet regarding some material fragments that were collected. Do you want to remind us about what happened?
Yeah, absolutely. So earlier this year, there was a massive story. It literally went viral on a couple of scientists from Harvard who were going out exploring in a boat to try and dredge up remnants of something they thought could be an interstellar visitor. And what had happened was almost a decade ago now, we had on a defense radar an alert that something traveling very fast had entered our atmosphere and from back propagating those measurements could figure out that it was most likely something from beyond our solar system. It was just traveling too fast. And so the working theory was that it could have been a meteorite or a comet from outside of our solar system. However, a couple of scientists have speculated that it could have been an alien spacecraft. However, there's absolutely no evidence for that as we stand.
So this, whatever it was hurtling towards Earth so fast. It went through our atmosphere and crashed into Earth at some point. So they know exactly where it crashed. Is that where the scientists were searching for this material?
So within reason, but the Earth is absolutely massive and we don't know exactly precisely where it was. The error region of where it could have crashed into is very large. Most of it is water. And also a lot of it could have burnt up while entering our atmosphere. So not much of it would have been left behind. And so these scientists went out and they pulled up something from the bottom of the ocean that they thought possibly could be remnants, like tiny little spherical metal looking fragments. And they've argued the case very strongly that these are in fact the remnants. However, there's been lots of criticism to the fact that they're probably not.
So a paper has been produced. So I assume that's gone through all the, you know, the peer review process, etc. What's it saying?
Yeah, so the latest paper that has gone through the peer review process, which is not from this team, has actually said that these, from everything that's been released about them, look really similar to coal ash contaminants. So this is a separate research team saying, hey, hold on, before you make too many large claims, it could just be something that was left over by us humans here on the Earth.
So coal ash, in terms, is that you mean what is left over from burning coal? How would that get into the sea?
Exactly. So we've been burning coal for a couple hundred years now, and as we burn it, it gets traveled up into our atmosphere. You get soot in different places, and then that can travel and get blown around.
So no alien spacecraft yet.
Not yet. I'm not willing to quit my day job on it just yet.
All right. We are chatting to Sarah Webb from Swinburne University about what's been happening in space. Now, 40 years ago, there were some things, I suppose, returned from the moon. They are still helping us to get there.
They were. Yeah, exactly. So we had the amazing Apollo program, which started in 1969 and had many successful landings and returns from the moon. And each Apollo mission brought back different samples. So they brought back soil samples of the moon. It's what we call regolith. Mm-hmm. And then they also brought back whole little boulders, little moon rocks back for us to analyze. And these samples are so rich, they're so large that we're still unlocking and analyzing new samples today. And we've just had news come out that a new sample that they had unlocked from over 40 years ago had what we found and what we're pretty sure is hydrogen locked away within it, which is really, really cool. And it's something we thought might have been possible but hadn't confirmed on this particular sample yet.
So this rock we've had for 40 years, we didn't realize that it had the hydrogen. We've just found out that it's got hydrogen in it. What's the big thing about hydrogen that makes it so exciting?
So what is really exciting is the fact that if hydrogen is locked away in this small sample, it's possibly locked away all over the moon. And when we go back for the Artemis program in a few years, we're going to be having people live and work on the moon, and we're going to be trying to extract materials from the moon itself. And one of the materials we might want to extract is hydrogen, because we could use it to then make water, and we could also use it to then potentially make rocket fuel as well. So it's quite important.
So it'll be like its own little petrol station up there.
Pretty much, yeah. Like a nice little, a little petrol station on the moon.
Sarah,
hydrogen station.
Why wouldn't we use solar?
So we could use solar to power things while we're on the moon, depending on what part of the moon we're on and if it's lunar day. So the moon goes through day and night like us, except their days are 2 weeks long, their nights are 2 weeks long.
Ah.
But for our rockets, for the propulsion of actually maneuvering from the Earth to the moon, that's where we need the hardcore rocket fuel.
Ah, now you were talking before, you said Apollo, you know, made many trips to and from the moon, and of course it did land people on the moon, and it brought back these samples that we're talking about that has hydrogen in it. I mean, why is the moon such a big thing to get to again, given that we've been there so many times?
Yeah. So with the Apollo missions, they targeted a very particular area of the moon, and it was around near the equator. So they did a lot of the surface basins, which we can see with our naked eyes. And we look up at the moon and we can see places like the Sea of Tranquility, and they almost look like big flat plains on the moon. What we're doing with the Artemis program is going back to the moon, but this time heading towards the South Pole.
Oh.
And the South Pole of the moon is really different. It's a much different landscape, and it even has much different materials, and we think quite a bit of water locked away, which could hold the secrets to, first of all, how the moon formed. We have our theories, but it could solidify that once and for all. But it could also give us inklings to how life began on the Earth, possibly.
Fantastic. And that water, I mean, if we're in the process now of, I suppose, using water, we're in the process of creating hydrogen, aren't we, as a potential fuel, could we therefore also get hydrogen from the water?
Yeah, absolutely. You just come be a rocket scientist with us, please. You've got the great ideas. Yeah, exactly right. So you take water and you split it out and you get your hydrogen and your oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
Oxygen is very important. We like that to breathe, We could use that, and we could also use that hydrogen for fuel potentially. Same with oxygen too.
Fantastic. Now, let's get to the big one. I'm really excited about this because
I reckon
something's going to go to Mercury and someone's going to tap on the lens and go, hello, didn't expect me there. Is that the sort of life we're talking about?
Maybe not tapping on a lens, but there could potentially be tiny, tiny little microbial life on Mercury, which this is kind of a big deal, because for decades we've written Mercury off as kind of like a lifeless little rock. Mm. We love Mercury, but we didn't think that she had much going on. I know, she's just so close to the sun. Very, very, very hot environment. No magnetic field, no atmosphere. And we thought it was, you know, very unlikely that we could potentially find life on Mercury. But new research has come out saying that they have just discovered really large salt glaciers on Mercury. And what is amazing is when you look at very salty places around the Earth, you find it teeming with really unique, tiny little microbial life. So that's very exciting.
Isn't that interesting? Because when I think of salt, and I think how, you know, my mother used to say, well, and if you've got an ulcer or something, gargle with salt, it'll kill off everything.
Yes.
And, you know, it will heal itself. So salty environments still support life.
Yeah, they do. So, yeah, certain types of bacteria and small microbes can live in really extreme environments, and they're not normally the things that we find in our everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
But we're continuously surprised everywhere we look on the Earth, in places that we think life probably wouldn't survive, we end up finding it after a while. And so there's no reason why potentially there couldn't be small organisms that are able to withstand the heat and live on Mercury. It's a very big if, and a very big, you know, question mark, but I think it's something we couldn't rule out now.
You know what, Sarah? What I love is this curiosity. You know, it's the essence of science, isn't it? Let's ask the question, find out, and if we don't find out what we intend to find out, we'll find out something else.
Exactly. That is what makes science so magical.
Sarah, great to chat with you. We'll talk to you again in a fortnight.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That is Sarah Webb, astrophysicist from Swinburne University of Technology.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.